birthday party?
Then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope my abracadamits are getting stuff done, son. Me, personally, I ain't got shit done this week, and I'm fine with that because me and the fam are here at the beach. We have been at the beautiful Orange Beach, Alabama. Yes, beautiful beach down here. Part of Gulf Shores, White Sands. It has been a very nice, relaxing week. Good food. Shrimp, if you like shrimp, they got amazing shrimp down here. And grits. I love grits. We have grits back home, but down here, they literally have grits with everything. Like, you guys complain about pineapple on pizza. How about grits on pizza? Literally grits on everything down here. It's crazy. But hey, I love this place. Very beautiful. We're having a great time. It's been a pretty good week. I shot a scene for a pilot, for a TV show pilot, which that was fun. Definitely interesting. And some show dates. We're going to get some show dates real quick before we get going. October 20th, 25th, 26th, and 27th, you can catch me at Harrah's Casino in Cherokee, North Carolina. I'll be there. So if you are in Cherokee, North Carolina, if you're out gambling, hey, come catch my show. I will be there. October 23rd, back home in Knoxville, Tennessee, I'm going to be at the Barrel House. Definitely want to check that out, the Barrel House Brewery by Gypsy Cider. It's going to be a great show. We're going to have a great time. It's on Knoxville area. If you're out there, please come out, check out the show. And October 30th, I'm going to be headlining the Cabin Fever show. It's a Will Gotson production, and it's a big Halloween party. So we're going to get down and have a good time, and that's going to be in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. So if you're in any of those areas, you get a chance, come out and see me. I would love to see you because we're going to have a blast at all three of those places. But now let's get on to the episode here. Let's give a big shout-out for the sponsor for today's episode. Okay. You ever get up in the middle of the night and you think you might see like a shadowy figure there in the corner of your bedroom? And then you get to looking a little closer and you're like, does that guy, does he have my underwear? But then you realize it's just that big pile of dirty laundry that's been piling up in your bedroom. That's right, folks. Today's episode is brought to you by Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Yes. Now, if you're anything like me, I hate doing laundry. And yes, dirty laundry can pile up. So don't hesitate to take your laundry to Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services, located at 122 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Give Bob a call at 865-951-3237. Bob also offers a delivery service for anyone who's a senior citizen or homebound. Guys, doing your laundry has never been easier. All you have to do is take your big old pile of dirty clothes, drop it off, come back, and your clothes will be clean, dry, and folded and ready to go. Bob's Washboard Wash and Fold Services. Check them out today. All right. Now, today's guest is somebody who really any one of us could sit down and talk to for a week. And I mean, especially if you're a magician, because, I mean, he loves magic. He's one of these people who, you know, truly loves magic, and he's extremely passionate, and you can just feel it. You know, you can just feel his energy when he's talking about it. Very creative guy, very funny. He's a naturally funny dude, and I don't give that compliment out lightly. Really, I don't. You know, he really is a very natural, funny guy. You're going to laugh when you talk with him. And he gives back so much, too. He gives a lot back to the magic community, does a lot of things. A lot of things that's very needed for the magic community, he is giving back. But anyways, let's just get right into it. I guarantee you're going to enjoy this conversation, and I guarantee you're going to laugh, too, okay? Some crazy stuff in this one, guys. So if you will, abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the crazier in hell magician, Ben Train.
All right, we got magician Ben Train here today. How you doing, Ben?
I am doing amazingly. How are you, Danny?
Doing good, doing good. I tell you what, man, I'm excited to get you on the Abracadam podcast. But if you don't mind, will you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
I will give you a very quick description, and then you guys can go into more depth. My name is Ben Train. I am a full-time professional magician living in Toronto, Canada. I am the co-founder of the Toronto Magic Company, which puts on public magic events all over Toronto, shows, workshops, lectures, conventions, classes, you name it, we do it. And I've spent the last 20 years creating magic, learning magic, studying magic, and performing. And now I am living with my cat and my business partner, Jonah Babbins, and we are trying to navigate through this crazy post-pandemic world. We're trying to figure out how we're going to put on events in 2022. And maybe you heard my cat in the background. I'm trying to figure out how to keep him quiet. Would you shut the hell up? That's me. I'm gonna pick him up while I do this. Ooh.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you this. What's the cat's name?
The cat's name is Margaret Catwood, and it's a boy cat. When I first got him, I didn't realize it was a boy because he's not very masculine. He's a cute little cat. I didn't know. I'm not good at telling the sex. So the vet told me, but the story is crazy. It was a cat that moved into my porch when I moved into my first place. And I put a collar on him with a note saying, whose cat is this? And I found out it was a next door neighbor's cat. And when I approached them and I said, hey, your cat's living with me. They were like, oh yeah, we believe cats choose their owners. He chose you, so he's yours now. And then they closed the door on my face. And I was like, whoa, okay, now I have a cat. And then when I moved, I took him with me. And now he is the mascot of my company. And this is crazy. I am allergic to cats. My housemate is allergic to cats. And we have magicians who stay with us all the time. And it's like 95% of magicians are allergic to cats, but we all put up with him because he's adorable.
He is an adorable cat, and that's a crazy
Your listeners can't see him, but he's got thumbs, and he can give massages, okay? That is the dopest shit ever. That's all I'm saying.
The cool thing, I agree. I think cats do choose your owners. You know what I mean? And I always find it comical whenever I see, like, I swear to God, a couple months ago, someone had posted a lost cat sign in my neighborhood. And I was like, dude, you're in denial, bro. You know, cats don't get lost. They move out. You know,
I heard someone say that, like, you ever go to someone's house and they're like, oh, close the door. We don't want the dog or cat getting out. And they're like, that's not a pet. That's a hostage.
Yeah.
Escape every time. Like, yeah, this guy, he used to be an indoor cat. Now he is an outdoor cat, but he sits on a chair in my front lawn and that's it. And so people come by and they pet him and they play with him. He's like the neighborhood cat.
And one more time, what was the cat's name again?
Mr. Margaret Catwood.
Mr. Margaret Catwood. That
and
is
named after the author Margaret Atwood.
Cool. Okay. Nice. I like it. My cat's name is Doris. Named after I have no clue. My son named her Doris. So that's her name. But she's
also an adorable name. I like when people have pets like dogs or cats that are named after people. You know, like a Buster, it's like Charles or Kevin. You're like, that's a funny name for a dog. I don't know.
My best friend had a dog named Steve, which was just, you know, it was just, I think that's awesome. He names all his dogs, you know, like Walter. He's got a Walter. You know, it's just, it's what he does. But I agree.
I just read a story today about a famous magician, Tony Giorgio, who was like a card sheet and, you know, like a TV actor. And in the 60s, he was a magician at the Magic Castle along with a guy named Larry Jennings. And apparently they were feuding and hated each other. So Tony Giorgio named his dog Larry Jennings. So he could tell stories like, oh, look at Larry Jennings there shitting on the carpet. Oh, look at Larry licking his balls. Oh, look at, you know, then.
Oh, apparently my God, that's hilarious.
Right? It's a great idea. You name your pet after someone you don't like, and now you can yell at it all day long.
That is awesome. Let me do this real quick. One thing about you, Ben, I remember, I'm pretty sure this is how things went down. Whenever God invented the internet, Ben Train popped up soon after. And because
The first time ever seeing your name on the internet, I remember at a place where we all hung out back in the day called, you know, what's the cafe.
Oh, and yeah.
Which this is a website where magicians, it's a forum for, you know, for magicians, a website for magicians where we can go chat. And Ben was a very knowledgeable person back then. Well, you know, well, at least you appeared to be. So, and yeah, I believed it. I believed it. And then you have been, you know, your name and your face has been around ever since. One thing I found this hilarious. And this is one thing that I don't even know what the backstory is. I don't know what was going on. But I saw you had posted a picture, and I believe this may have been on Facebook. And this was so damn funny. I don't know if you were doing a tour with another magician. I'm not sure exactly what magician it was.
What photo could this be? Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat.
I don't know who this was, but even if it wasn't a magician, it may not have been a magician. But whoever it was, this was hilarious to me. Is this person was passed out on the hotel bed, and you, sir, were doing an ace assembly on their back. That is hilarious.
It was Alan Ackerman, who in the 1970s was voted the best card magician alive. We went on a lecture tour together, and he is a monster. I could tell you so many stories about that guy because he is amazing. Like he wore cargo pants on the tour, and he'd fill his cargo pants with decks of cards. And one day we were walking and he was shuffling the cards and it started to rain. And this is not, I'm not making this story up. It started to rain and he kept shuffling. And as soon as the cards got a little too damp, he dropped them in a garbage, took out a deck of cards and kept shuffling. And he just kept walking through the rain shuffling. At my parents' table, we were eating dinner and he was playing with cards. And when the food came out, he shuffled with one hand while eating. Like the guy never stopped. He's a monster. Yeah, Alan Ackerman. And then when they finally did stop, he passed out. I was like, I have to. This is my one chance. We took some photos. We did other weird stuff in photos, but that's the only one I'm allowed to talk about for legal reasons.
And for you guys not familiar, ace assembly is a card trick that uses, aces. So, but I saw that and I never forgot that photo. I thought that is so damn funny. That is awesome. Well, let's do this real quick, Ben. You know, we always have to give like our backstory in magic, you know. So what happened to Ben Train? What got him into magic? Were you bit by a spider? What happened? What's the deal?
I wish I had a really cool backstory. Sadly, it's a pretty typical one. I was a kid, like 8 years old. I was not popular at school. I had ADD and ADHD. So I was loud and obnoxious and also shy, which was a weird combination. And I was getting bullied at school. And one day after class, my mom said, you know, if you do something to deserving of a reward, I don't know, you do well on a test, we'll take you to a local magic store. So I was like, that sounded pretty cool. I did well. I went to the store and I was blown away by how welcoming and inviting the people were. And, you know, I think that there was plenty of opportunities where they could have been like, oh, you don't know how this is done. Well, you don't know anything, blah, blah, but they weren't. People were excited to share things with me. They were excited to show me things. And what was really, I remember distinctly, was someone at the store, there was a table in the store that you could sit down in, and other more experienced magicians would be sitting around the table. And when I sat down, they said, hey, if you buy this thing and practice it, come back next week and we'll show you something else. And when I came back the next week, they went, oh, Ben's back. And like, for a shy, awkward kid who was struggling at school, you know, to have kids your age and these older kids, that was the big part. Like I was 8 and these kids were like 15 years old and they were like cool card magicians and they knew who I was and they welcomed me back. It made me want to do it. And it wasn't long after that that I had my first real like knock me on my butt magic experience, which was I purchased a trick deck of cards. So a deck of cards that was printed in such a way to accomplish the trick. It didn't require sleight of hand. And I went home and I learned it. And then I came back the next week and someone was at the table and they showed me a trick. And I said, that was really good. I know how it's done. It's the trick deck. I just bought it last week. And the guy was like, no, I did it with a normal deck. And they pushed the cards toward me and I picked them up and I was like, I'm sorry, what? And that was when my brain exploded. And I realized this person with sleight of hand was able to do with a normal deck what I needed a dozen trick decks to do. And that was the moment where everything shifted, where I was like, I'm buying books. And like, that's when I became fascinated in learning sleight of hand. Like the idea that you could do miracles, and not just miracles, but like profound things that people would remember the rest of their life, but also funny, ridiculous things that would make people laugh and things that could bring people together, or even in some ways, like things that could like break discussions apart. So people talk like so cool with just a normal deck. I wanted to learn. And I was hooked, and everything I've done in magic since then is really stems from those two things, like wanting to learn and share and create and wanting to be part of a community.
You know, and you've done exactly that. I totally agree with you 100%. I remember, you know, my first experience in a magic shop, getting my brains fooled out with he had a gimmick deck, and I went out and I purchased the gimmick decks, but it wasn't, you know, I had the sleight of hand experience. I was like, I've got to learn these things. But it's also funny, your journey in magic, like a lot of us, we will get caught with the bug by the gimmicks and the toys. And then later on, we learn sleight of hand. And then we come back to those toys and realize those toys aren't toys. They're actually tools.
And they're toys.
And they're toys, yeah.
Like, you're right. I totally came back to them because, you know, I'm a grown ass adult man now. I'm 36 years old, and I am man enough to admit I love playing with toys. I love arts and crafts. I love having fun. And like, there is something awesomely cool about like doing something with sleight of hand. And if I have the preference, if I can do it with sleight of hand, and then I will. But often, if someone really knows sleight of hand, using a gaff or a trick deck or something secret, an apparatus to accomplish something, allows you to do something you simply couldn't do with sleight of hand or couldn't do the way that you would with sleight of hand. And I think it opens up doors, and it's fun. It is fun to play. It is fun to break things apart. It is fun to put them together. And, you know, over this pandemic, one of the things that I've been doing is really, I updated my arts and crafts room. I was so excited. I went out yesterday. This is the bag. No joke. This is a bag filled with like cool gorilla tape and stuff, you know, because I've been building props. I've been going through the old books, finding props that are 100 years old that used to be manufactured out of wood and glass and metals. And I go, wait a minute. Now we have 3D printing. We have prototype renderers. We have all sorts of stuff. And I can custom design a prop so it looks a certain way or works a certain way, or it's a certain size, you know. And so I am my mind has been blown over the last like couple of years, going back to the things that I abandoned when I was younger because I thought I was too cool, so that I could start playing with them again. That and Lego's dope.
Yeah, absolutely. Unrelated.
I'm just hoping someone from Lego is listening and they sponsor me.
There, you hear it. Lego, sponsor Ben Train, please. Would be a wise move.
How crazy would that be? How crazy would it be if I messaged you in a couple of weeks and be like, you'll never believe this, someone from Lego. I did a podcast, and I mentioned on the podcast a while back that I collected Canadian coins, and that there was one collectible Canadian coin that I've been trying to get, but I wasn't able to get. And somebody who worked at the mint in Montreal sent me the coins. So you never know. So you know what? Lego or Michael Jordan, either of those. I would love Jordan Branch.
Now, I do know Michael Jordan listens to the podcast, so
yeah, I think he does.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me do this real quick. Okay, let's back up a little bit because you are involved in a lot of things. Also, you give back to the magic community a lot. And there's a lot of things you guys are involved with. I know you've got the Tarbell course kind of thing you're working on, correct? Which yeah. The Tarbell course in magic is the most complete course in magic out there for anyone interested in getting into magic. But now you guys are selecting a trick out of each Tarbell course. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, so it's a really cool project, I think, because it's something anybody can do. So the Tarbell series of magic, it was published around the 1930s. Harlan Tarbell was a magician who compiled a ton of material. And it's not just card tricks, it's everything. It's large scale illusions, it's apparatus that you build, it's stuff with paper, with fire. And he put it's 8 volumes. And what's amazing is you can buy this at any great good magic store. You can buy it at any crappy magic store, but also because it's in the public domain, you can get it for free as a PDF online. So magicians or even non-magicians, you can get these books, you go through the books, and what we're doing is each month we go through one book. We start at book one, we go sequentially through the series, and me and my business partner and my magic partner, Jonah Babbins, we each pick one trick from the book. We work on it in private. We develop our own version of it, and then we perform it on video and we let people watch it at home. And just to give you an idea of what it might look like, we didn't release this one yet, but there's a trick in one of the books called Coin in the Loaf of Bread. And it's, you have somebody sign a coin and it disappears and it appears inside a loaf of bread. Kind of a weird trick. Well, I took it even weirder. I have a doll of a rabbit called Trixie the Magic Bunny. And it's like a Teddy Ruxpin where you pull a little cord and it speaks and it does a trick. And so someone, we borrow a bill, it gets signed, the bill disappears and the talking bunny doll is talking the whole time. And then to make the bill come back, we have to, the whole tone shifts and we have to sacrifice the bunny to Satan. And I take a knife and I cut into the bunny and then I pull out its voice box, and inside its voice box, you have to unlock it with a special padlock, is the person's signed bill. So it's just like ridiculous. It goes off the rails. But like, again, we're just like, how can we take a trick? How can we add our personality to it? And how do we start with this seminal text, which is a great launching point? Really hard to come up with your own stuff out of the blue, but it's really easy to take something else that someone's worked on and then modify it into something brand new.
Which is perfect, man. I love that you guys are doing that, because you're inspiring creativity and originality with other magicians, which is something that is needed so bad. And that just shows proof. I mean, we're not going to show up and not necessarily make our own classic. You know what I mean? Like, I think we might. But I mean, but what you've done is you took, you know, the impossible location, and you've put your twist, your personality into it. And I think I love that. I think that's super important for magic.
And I think that, you know, over time, like, I think one of the reasons something becomes a classic, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. We won't get into like what makes something a classic, but I think that there are certain pieces that are memorable that we associate with certain peoples, or they become iconic because somebody, they're memorable, they're different, it's a powerful trick, and someone does it enough that it develops into something really beautiful. And I think of like all the iconic tricks are like, that I can think of, or most of them are based off other people's works. You know, like Matt King, who's one of the most famous comedy magic magicians on the planet, he does a cards across with his raincoat of invisibility. And like, that is like, that trick is like 300 years old. Cards are traveling across. It's an old trick, but like, that Matt King, like, you know, like that is iconic, you know? And so I think about that with all my stuff. Like, a big thing that motivates me is I want to enjoy it. I want it to resonate with me. I want it to spark something in me. And someone pointed out to this to me a while ago, which is, you know, if you're going to take time and develop something, like, it's going to be rough at the beginning and then it's going to develop over time. If you're going to spend that time, might as well work on something that's your own. So, you know, I'm happy to start with some other source, but like, all the pieces in my show that I don't feel like put my own touch on, those are the ones I don't like. And sometimes those are the ones, and I'm embarrassed to say it, like, it hurts me, it pains me to say this, but sometimes those are the ones the audience likes the most, you know, like, you know, and then I'm like, it's very hard for me to figure out. I struggle with this, the conflict as an artist. I'm like, well, I don't want to do anything that doesn't excite me. And then as someone who wants them eat, I'm like, yeah, but that one gets me the money. So I'm like, yeah. So that's my always battle. If I can figure out a way to take these tricks that I like or that are working well in my show that for some reason I connect with and give it some sort of spin, then it's good.
You know, I totally know exactly how you feel. And the, you know, there's one routine that I do in my show that I open with a lot, which I can't stand doing anymore. I hate doing. Because it's been seen a thousands.
I have a guess what routine it is, but you tell me what it is. I have a guess.
Well, I mean, no, well, honestly, if you can't, well, it's a great routine. Don't get
me
wrong.
Is it a marketed routine?
Yes, it is.
Does it involve cards?
No, it does not.
Whoa, it's not this one.
No, okay. No. It's the, well, I do, it's a great routine. Don't get me wrong. But it's the fiber optics professor's nightmare, which rope trick, ladies and gentlemen, it's the rope trick. If you've seen the show, guys, you know what trick we're talking about. The, and you know, I know a lot
great
of
trick, great trick.
It's a fantastic trick. Thank you, Rich Sanders, for putting all the things together that we would have had to go searching for in books for. Great. But now that I do it, I've put my own twist on it with my own jokes. And so,
right.
But the problem that I look at it is sometimes an audience member, if they see a rope trick, they will clump every rope trick in the same pile. They're like, yeah, I've seen that one before, you know, even though it may be a completely different routine, you know.
You know, so we as part of the Toronto Magic Company, we produced hundreds of events with hundreds of magicians over the past few years. And the two biggest pieces of negative criticism we get, and almost all the feedback we get from people is positive. You know, we've had amazing magicians on our show. But the two things that we get, that's like people always go, oh, I love the show, but, and they say either this, either I've seen those tricks before, either on Penn and Teller's Fool Us or somewhere, or the show or something, you know, they loved it, but they wish it had more wow factor. And I find like, a lot of magic tricks right now, it's a lot of repetitive stuff, especially with like the popularity of shows like Fool Us and America's Got Talent, where we're starting to even see winners who are repeating material over and over and over. And when they don't, those people win, like we just saw in America's Got Talent. But we're starting to see repetition. We're starting to see, you know, what you used to read in old magic books that, you know, the first time you show magic to someone, it's probably their first time ever seeing a trick. And it's like, I don't think that's true anymore. I feel like people are seeing so much magic on YouTube and everywhere else, and people are sharing it. So I think that we're seeing this issue where if you're not creating and innovating and putting your own spin on things, it will be very easy. If you pull out ropes, or like I do card tricks where I'm like, you pick a card and I'll tell you what it is. If that's what the trick is, yeah, it's going to be pretty damn hard. You know, someone thinks of a word and you look at them and tell them what it is. Like, it's going to be hard for you to
separate. I think it's put more shows like Fool Us and America's Talent has actually rose, you know, put pressure on creativity. Like, you need to, no more clones. And the only thing that said, like, I'll never forget doing the rope routine, and a guy afterwards, he loved the show. He was like, man, I love the show. When I saw the ropes, I thought, yes, I've seen this one, but what kind of saved me with that guy, he goes, was the jokes, the originality, my personality that I put into the routine. And totally. I'm just like you, you know, I have a ton of original things in my show now that, but then there's times when, like right now through COVID, I almost had a whole new hour of material you know, a lot of work went into it. Now, granted, it's not tested, so we don't know what sucks and what doesn't suck and what needs to change, you know, but there was a few routines.
That's okay. You know what they say? The first step to success is suck ass.
So you guys have the Toronto Magic Company, which this gives magicians an opportunity to work things and work out things like that. Correct.
Yeah. We have open mics that we run. We have programs where we provide platforms for people to try stuff. You know, one of the big things, I travel a lot doing magic in different places, and every city that has a big magic culture has a different feel. Chicago feels different from New York, which feels different from like LA, which feels different from Toronto. And one of the things that I dig about Toronto is that we have a lot of guys and gals who are testing new stuff on stage. And so, like, I know this is going to sound like a weird thing to brag about, but we got a lot of unpolished performers. And I know it sounds weird, but I think that what it means is, like, we have a lot of people who are, you know, if someone goes up there and does undeveloped material, it doesn't mean they don't also have developed polished material, right?
Oh.
Like, if I do a corporate show, I have material I can fall back on, but the fact that we have so many people in the city who are going up and trying new things and willing to risk failure to develop stuff means we have a lot of really creative people. People like, you know, I'm not saying they all come out to our events, but we have like Jay Sankey, we have Chris Mayhew, we have so many, like there's so many. I could just spend the next hour listing them. But, you know, I love that about Toronto. And I think it's got to be fun for us. We got to keep pushing the boundaries, and we got to stop worrying. You know, one thing that I, when I first started performing, I worried a lot about evoking a negative reaction. I worried that people would not like me. And I still worry about that, but I think it's better to focus instead on creating strong reactions. Like accepting that if you do something and people love you, it also means you're going to polarize and there's going to be people who don't, right? If you do something where you're so funny and you're so edgy, you know, like if you're Norm MacDonald, there's going to be people that don't like you. If you're, you know, and the same thing, if you make a choice to play it really conservative or really traditional, then there's going to be groups of people that you don't play for. So I think find that inner character. And if you can, you know, commit to what you're doing and trust yourself and trust the process, willing to risk it and willing to have people not like you, you'll end up with potentially something really weird and personal and different and cool.
God, that's once again, so true. But let me, this is interesting too, because you brought this up. First of all, Ben, you are I've never seen your full show, but I can tell you right off the bat.
Terrible.
Well, get out of here. I seriously, I have seen some stuff though. Hold on. That was not terrible, but I want to say this. First of all, your personality, you are a naturally funny dude, which is, can't be taught. But I'm also with you on that to where you feel like people are going to hate you. Is that something that we carry around? Are we born with that freaking curse? What is that? And people don't.
Yeah. It's crazy to me when people don't like, you know, I don't understand the people who like, I watch certain people and they have such a big ego and they are just ready to rock that stage. And I don't mean necessarily always as a bad thing, like, but yeah. There are certain people who should not have big egos because they are abysmal. But I'm just like, you know, like I play basketball and I'm not good. And I know of LeBron James and Michael Jordan, you know, like I understand where the caliber of skill is. So like, I can't have an ego ever as a basketball player. And as a magician, I know that the David Copperfields of the world and the David Blaines and these people exist. And it's hard. I don't know. It's hard for me to not think like I'm an imposter. So I don't know if it's a natural thing, but certainly me. And it's something I've heard from a lot of performers. Like, I feel like I'm faking it. I feel like, you know, sometimes I'm concerned that what I'm supposed to be sharing is profound, right? It's magic. It's supposed to be beautiful and life-changing and profound. And here I am being like, have you guys seen my wooden duck? Look at this idiot. Like, you know, and I'm like, I'm putting cards down my pants and I'm shitting out their card. And I'm like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And then there are times when I think about how society views me, you know, like my parents are teachers or doctors or lawyers or whatever they are. And my aunts and uncles are lawyers and aunts and my friends are lawyers and aunts. And then it's like, what are you doing? Like, I pretend to be a wizard, you know, like, it's like, what the fuck? Like, and I don't know. And so like, there are definitely times when I feel wacky and weird about the stuff, but the times I don't feel wacky and weird, like the times I don't feel like I'm questioning myself is like, when I'm with that audience and we're connecting and it's something where I'm being genuine and true to myself, where I don't feel like an imposter, where I am talking about my passions and I'm sharing whether it's weird or not, and whether I care if there's a payoff or not. So like, I mean, I don't know if it's weird that we feel that way. I don't know if normal people don't feel that way. I don't know if I'll ever change, but I always feel like an imposter. I always feel like I'm concerned with what people think, you know? And I also think, just to tie back to the laughter, the joke thing, I don't know how funny I am, but I do know that it took a lot of work. And I remember when I was a kid, my dad told me, he's like, remember, jokes are supposed to be funny, not make people want to punch you in the face. Yeah. And, you know, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good note. Thanks, Dad. That was a violent way to tell me that. Jesus Christ. But, but he was right. You know, like I was irritating people when I was younger, I was shy. And the magic going to improv classes and learning from magicians and using other people's jokes when I was younger, learning how to tell it and asking myself, like, why does that guy tell a joke and it gets a big laugh? And I tell the exact same joke and nobody laughs. And it's like, I'm
now, have you done stand up or anything before?
I did for a little bit. It was not for me. I mean, I enjoy writing jokes. Yeah, I enjoy writing jokes. But again, it was that imposter syndrome where like, I'm watching comedians who I've admired my whole life, the Dave Chappelle's and all these people. And then I'd go on stage and I'm like, wow, in my third try, I wasn't Dave Chappelle. You know, I don't like this. So I enjoy doing it. But I also found like, as a comedian magician, I have the platform to tell my jokes and people pay me more to do it, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to keep doing that. And like, I also have the luxury of like, I don't know if I would be that funny a comedian. I don't know if I'd be that mind-blowing a magician, but maybe together I'm mediocre.
The right. comedy, I think you will, first of all, you're a badass magician, bro. And
I'm going to keep being self-deprecating in the hopes that you'll keep
That's the comic in you. So yeah, you piece of garbage.
Tell me how handsome I am too. I'm a great kisser. I bleach my butthole.
But anybody does an ace assembly on Alan Ackerman's back, dude, that's brilliant. That is brilliant.
We also took all of the money he made on the lecture tour. It was all in American bills, and I scattered it all over the bed, and I had empty beer bottles that I had brought with me, and I put it all over. So we have like crazy photos where it looks like that guy went hard. And I still have them. I have them printed. This is before digital. So I had them printed with film. So I have them in my house physically. That's right, so Alan Ackerman. Weird. If you hear me, buy me Lego or else I'm releasing the photos.
Oh, man. Okay, well, all right. So we've talked about the, and once again, the other thing about the Toronto Magic Company, it's kind of like an open mic though for magicians to test out and work on new things, correct?
That's one of the shows. So we have, okay. We have the newest trick in the book, which is our open mic. We have the Art of Magic, which is our larger show where we bring in international performers. We have big headline shows that are 300 seat theaters with international stars. The goal of the Toronto Magic Company was to provide a platform for magicians, not just to develop material, but also for them to share their magic on different levels. So if someone has never been on stage before, an open mic is a good place to try stuff. But if you're a full-time pro and maybe you don't want to try new stuff for the first time in a paid show, you can do it there as well. Then with the Art of Magic show, we had spots for local talent. We had up and rising stars. We had longer spots that were paid. Then we have larger spots and et cetera, et cetera. So whatever level you're at, there was shows that range from 5 minutes to an hour for hundreds of people to 20, you know, like.
That's so we awesome.
Do everything. And the same with like, we have jam sessions for magicians to hang out. We have stuff for non-magicians to learn tricks. We have programs that we did with local like art groups that would help share magic information, God, just to spread the craft. Like we do conventions for magicians. Like, again, it's if my whole dream, and I joke about this with my friends, anybody who knows me well has heard me talk about this like commune idea of like, I just want to build this like commune, like lots of different little houses for people to live on. All of them are my friends. We all do magic. We all do fun stuff. And like, that's the world I want to live in. So I want to live in a world where like, I can see my friends, we can do projects together, we can make a living, we can share what we love, we have an audience and a fan base, and everybody's working together to build it up. So everything I do is based on that, because I am selfish and I want people to support me.
That, which, you know what, that is awesome, man. Really, that is. Gosh, entertainment in general needs more people like you, Ben.
I agree. You hear that, Mom? I want a brother. She's not here. I live alone.
Or another cat. Hey.
Or another cat. Yeah. I'm trying to imprint on my cat and teach him how to make me grilled cheese sandwiches, but he doesn't do it.
Let me ask you this. This is weird too. I always feel awkward. Tell me, do you feel awkward when you do this? Whenever, you know, when I tell people what I do for a living, and you know, and I'm like, I'm a comedy magician, and you know, oh really? But there's always that moment of like awkwardness. Like you're telling somebody you're a, you know. I'm a fairy, you know.
Yeah, you sound like you're insane, right? Like if you met someone and you're like, oh, what's your name? Like, my name's Walter. Oh, what do you do, Walter? He's like, I guard the world from the demons. You're like, oh, shit, this guy's whacked. Really? It depends who I'm talking to. I'm a single dude right now. And so if I'm talking to another single lady, I probably don't say I'm a wizard. Because I might say...
He's broke.
I might say at different times in my life, I've said things like, right now I would say... I run an event production company. Huh? So sneaky, right? It's true. And then if they ask for details, I get to explain and be like, I just do shows. I've told people, at one time in my life, I told people I was like, I was a lecturer, which was true. I made, when I first started doing magic, I spent the first few years not performing. I was a full-time student at school in university. And I organized lecture tours for other magicians, and I lectured myself. So for years, I said I was like a lecturer and a lecture organizer. And then when I finished university, I still wasn't really performing full time. I was a little bit, but I was also producing shows for other people. So I was the guy who was like front of house selling tickets. I was backstage managing things. I was coming up with marketing strategies. And then I started performing more as I realized I'm putting all this work and time into building up other people's careers. And then when their career takes off, they go, hey, we don't need this kid anymore. Peace. And I was left with nothing. And so I started doing it. And then I ended up meeting Jonah, and I taught Jonah everything I knew, which took like 10 minutes.
Let me say, by the way, Jonah, by the way, has a fantastic podcast. If you guys aren't aware, The Discourse of Magic is one of my favorite podcasts.
It is. He just interviewed Teller from Penn & Teller, Darren Brown, Justin Willman, like everybody big. He's amazing. He is the other half of the Toronto Magic Company. He is the responsible for the business and the marketing, and to be honest, most of the success. And so over the last few years, Jonah has focused more on the business side, which has given me more time to sort of goof around and focus on like building puppets or playing with green screens or coming up with new tricks. And so, yeah, I don't really tell people I'm a magician. I might say I'm an entertainer or a speaker, because I don't think of myself as a magician. I really don't. Like when I was 16 and 17, I used to walk around with a deck of cards everywhere. And I was like, I always wanted to show tricks. And I know magicians who are like that. They're always ready to go. They're always on. Yeah. And I'm like, I have to put on a character. Like, I'm not Bruce Wayne pretending to be Batman. You know, he's Batman pretending to be Bruce Wayne. And I'm not Ben Train. Like, I'm not a magician pretending to be Ben Train. I'm Ben Train. And like, a magician is what I do when someone hires me. Like, exactly. Magic is, again, I love the community side of it. I love bringing my friends together. Magic is one of the ways that I do that. But like, I can also bring my friends together for barbecues and hangouts. Magic is just one of the tools I use it with. And it is something that I've been very privileged that I it allows me to play as an adult and make people happy and make a living.
So now, that's why. Okay. I'm the same way in a lot of ways. Now, I remember years ago, I could never leave the house if I didn't have my cards, if I didn't have this, or I couldn't wait for the first opportunity to show somebody a magic trick, regardless to where we are, a funeral, church, it doesn't matter, you know, doctor's office. But you know, those days have long gone. Now, when I'm off from performing, I'm off from performing. I'm Danny Whitson. I'm not, you know, the magic guy constantly, right. You know. Now, you know, a lot of people go through that phase, especially when they're really excited about magic. But I think the more and more you become, you perform and, you know, you become an entertainer. You know, I'm not entertaining right now. I was talking to another magician actually earlier today, and we were talking about, you know, being quick-witted. And on stage, I am quick-witted over years and years of experience of dealing with it. But there's times I can be in a conversation and I don't necessarily have to be on my toes to think of the best comeback, you know?
Totally.
So
today was one of my rare off days. So the way that I structured my business life is that Tuesdays, unless I have a show, Tuesdays are a day I take off. And so today I literally spent a day out in the sun with friends, having some drinks, you know. And so then I like took a little nap before this. And when I messaged you, I was like so jazzed and full of energy because I was filled with drinks. And then I woke up from my nap like, oh God, I hope I'm alive for this.
You know,
I'm not wearing pants.
That's okay. I'm not judging you. I'm wearing.
You would if you saw me without my pants.
I'm wearing that. Seven pairs of pants. It's actually my complete opposite.
That's good.
It's I like to sweat.
If you wearing seven pairs of pants and you shit yourself, how many pairs of pants did you shit in? What would you say? Like what? How do you determine that?
Well, I know I could clear at least three. At least three.
So you say it's by leakage.
Exactly. Well, I don't know. It's like the Titanic. For me,
if you were wearing a diaper and then you shit yourself and it doesn't go anywhere because you're in a diaper, you still shit your pants, right?
Absolutely. And I've not yet to wear. Well, I did wear a diaper, but I don't have the memory. So, but when that memory comes back one day, I'll probably be old enough to wear a diaper one day. Hopefully we make it. Yeah. I want to live old enough to shit myself.
I'm just saying that if you wore seven or eight or even 10 pairs of pants, the leakage doesn't matter, nor does the amount that you extrude. All that matters is you shit 10 pairs of pants at once, which is crazy. That's a crazy feat.
That could be a magic trick.
Yeah.
Somewhere we could...
Do you have an editor for this podcast? Is someone going to be able to cut that out?
Not at all. Not at all, Ben Train.
Someone's going to be driving to work, eating their breakfast sandwich, listening like, what the fuck is this podcast?
What are they talking about?
If there are any children listening to this podcast, kids, let us know how many pairs of pants you could put on at one time and then shit them. Okay. Whoever could shit the most pants at once wins a Danny hat, one of Danny's hats.
You can get one of these wiener dog hats, which
that's a sick hat. I don't know if people can see it, but I'll shit my pants right now for one of those hats.
It's a wiener hat. I love it. Well, here, damn it, Ben, I got sidetracked on shitting pants. Hold on. tell people you're a magician. Well, let's do this. Let's just move right into this.
You're like, how do I transition this? You're looking at your notes like,
I'm trying to
talk about shitting pants. Yeah, this is no good.
I love to keep it organic. I do. I love to keep it organic. Let's do this real quick. Every guest on the Abracadam podcast, Ben Train, has to tell a good hell gig story. Let's hear one, my man.
A good hell gig story. I have a couple, as you might imagine. One of them was when I was doing my first stand-up show. I was like 17 years old. And I was doing like two shows in a day. So I did the first show, went pretty well. And then I went out for lunch and some guy came to me at the restaurant. He's like, were you the magician I just saw on stage? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I saw your show. I loved it. And I'm the owner of the restaurant. I'm going to hook you up. Do you like wings? And I was like, I love wings. He's like, do you like your wings spicy? And I was like, yeah, I love my wings spicy. He's like, I gotcha. So he brings up these spicy wings. I take a bite. They're the hottest wings I've ever had in my life. But they're delicious and I don't want to insult this guy. I eat all the wings. I like walk back to the thing and I get ready to do the show. My face is swelling. I'm like dying. And this is recorded. So I have it and I go on stage and I'm nervous. The first show was like a small show, but now the place is packed. My family has come to see me. This is like my first. I'm like, I go up on stage and I'm like, hello, and my tongue has swollen so bad I can't talk. So I'm trying to talk and no one can understand anything that's going through. I like, my tongue was so swollen. So I had to do this whole show without being able to talk. People thought that I looked like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I was like sweating profusely. It's all on video. What else? I did another show where I was trying for the first time a whole bunch of new electronics. And you know, I don't want to explain what they were for in the show, folks, but secret stuff. But at one point in the show, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. I'm like, I got a towel over my head. I'm blindfolded. My hands are tied up. Like I'm really in a compromised position. And then the device that I have that's supposed to send me some sort of signal starts to vibrate. And at the same time, my microphone pack, something went wrong and it starts to vibrate. And this new watch that I had just been given that day for Christmas, which is like a smart fit tracker. I guess I hit 10,000 steps. So it starts going off. And then the phone in my pocket, which was on silent, and I shouldn't have had a phone in my pocket. This is bad showmanship. It starts vibrating. So I'm standing there, just standing on stage in front of all these people, trying to figure out what the hell is happening. I have to do this trick. And this is my big closer. And everything's vibrating at once. I'm getting 300 signals at once. I'm so embarrassed. I finish the show and I go off stage and I'm just so pissed. And the trick doesn't work. And I'm so mad. And I take off everything. And I'm like, fuck. I suck so much. What? I'm just yelling at myself. And then the door to the green room opens and the host leans in with a sweet smile on his face. He says, Ben, would you please turn off your mic? You know, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, so, you know, and I've had stuff like that. You do enough shows like stuff. I had someone come, they were a big sponsor who had seen me in another event that I crushed. You know, like an event for like 1,000 people, this corporate thing I just crushed, and they loved me and they wanted to bring me out to Vegas and fly me out. And I was like, well, I was like, yeah, sure. But also I'm doing a show like this week, come see it. You know, you might as well, I'll give you a free ticket. And they're like, great. And they came to the show and I bombed so hard that they didn't send me to Vegas. And I was like, oh, what a, you know, so if you ever, by the way, if you ever crush it and then someone's like, I love your stuff, don't tell them to come to a preview show after that. Just book whatever shows you can and cross your fingers so you don't bomb. I could go on for days about all the terrible shows I've done. That's
I love
you laughing at my misery.
Misery loves company.
Thumbs up my life. Yeah.
Oh man, I love it, dude. You know, let me ask you this, man, because okay, I've never been to Canada, and I would love to go
sorry?
To Canada one day. I would love to go to Canada one day. You know,
no, I heard you. I was just sorry.
Oh yeah. Well, not
that old joke.
The thing about, you know, I've had a few Canadians on here now and you're added to that list.
Who else is on the list? Who's a good Canadian? Name one.
Bill Abbott is a hell of a guy.
Bill Abbott was, I consider him my mentor from 16 to about 25, maybe even older. Nice. There's a lot of things. Every time I say stuff like, I can't remember right now, but I say a lot of Bill Abbott aphorisms, and I have a lot of Bill Abbott mannerisms, and a lot of the material I develop when people see me perform, I talk a lot like him. I have a similar sense of humor, and a lot of that is because, like, when I was 16, that guy, I met him, I got his autograph as a kid. I was like, oh, this guy is a badass. Like, and I still think he is. I think he's a badass.
There's, I mean, I could sit here and make this argument. I mean, this is an easy argument to make in magic. And, a lot of my friends are comics, not magicians. And I tell them about the impact that Canadians have had on magic. You know, the Einstein of magic, you know, was from Canada, you know, I mean, Di Vernon, you know, and then, yeah. But then you look at the so much super talented magicians.
David Hacker, Jay Sankey, Bill Abbott, David Benn, Ross Bertram.
So many.
And again, we can keep going through this. There's dozens. David Peck. Again, we can keep going forever and ever.
Tyler Wilson. Forever. It's insane. It's insane how
Greg Bruin, Lee Asher, Darcy Oak.
Yes. Why is, and I was wanting you to name this guy. Come on, man. He's one of the most famous. He's passed
Stuart
away.
Stuart James.
No. He's passed away. What is his name? Super famous.
Alan Slate?
No. Come on, Ben. Damn it. Come on.
Alan Slate was worth like $5 billion. He was pretty famous and powerful.
This guy's, come on. Super famous. Acidy, trippy, mushroomy guy. Love, hippie. Come on.
Oh, Doug Henning.
Yes, Doug Henning.
The Transcendental Movement. I was like, who are you? I was like, Terrence McKenna? What is he? Mushrooms, trippy.
Well,
I know.
Here's the thing about Doug Henning.
For real. That guy.
This is interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. Now, let's really think about this, okay? Take Doug Henning. If Doug Henning was to pop up now, if his kind of character, instead of when he did, if it would have happened now. Now, granted, updated with everything and stuff, but his type of style of magic, how do you think it would work now?
I mean, it's hard for anybody to say that, I don't know, but I feel like what made him such a successful performer was the enthusiasm and genuine love and passion he had for what he was doing, and the way that he was sharing it and the way that he made people feel. So I think, like, if he were to put together a show, like, it wouldn't look like what he did in the 70s. It wouldn't look like that was a product of its time. I think he would work with consultants who would help him create magic that fits more today. And I think he would be uncompromising in his views on how he would do it. And would he be edgy like Chris Angel, or would he be modern day shaman like David Blaine? Probably not. I think he would be more trippy and psychedelic. But I think, like, you know, David Blaine, as he's gotten older, he's getting a little bit more like, I'm this trippy, like, out there guy exploring what the human body is capable of, you know. And I think that I think he would kill it. I think.
I was just thinking that. I was like, you know, I would love to see, like, somebody needs to make a movie. If you're listening to this, make a movie about Doug Henning's life, like, now, an updated. I would love to see that. I think that would be something super interesting.
I 100% agree. And, you know, even his post magic sort of life is amazing. He ran in politics and other stuff. Like, it's a crazy story. A lot of
interesting things. Yeah. And once again, Canadian, so much talent. Why is it that there's so much talent that comes out of Canada, you know, in comedy and magic in the entertainment fields? I mean,
because it's so remote, man. We sit up here, we're trapped alone in our houses, reading our magic books. Like, Stuart James is one of the most original creators and prolific creators of magic ever. And that guy was insane, like, literally insane. He had multiple friends that weren't real. They were invisible, that he talked to in his house. And, you know, Fraxton and I don't want to say he was actually insane. That's not politically correct. It's not respectful, but he was. He was, him and his mother were one of the inspirations for Psycho.
I did not know that. Holy crap. True.
Yeah, so pretty crazy, but he lived on a remote farm and he talked to invisible friends. And I think a lot of people, I don't know about Canadians specifically as the world changes, but, like, we sit, we play, and, like, Canadians are loving people. There's we're lucky to have a lot of great places and opportunities for magicians to share. And I think as the world gets smaller and smaller with the invention of technology, so we can hang out and we can jam and we can talk to each other no matter where people live and no matter what time it is, we'll start seeing, you know, the borders will disappear, but we'll start seeing magic from everywhere. But that being said, Canadians are the best.
What do you think about this? Okay, what do you think about this? Because I've got this theory, okay? And I may be completely wrong.
Canadians are better kissers. Was that the theory?
I have no clue. I've never kissed.
It's true. I challenge any of your listeners to disprove me.
There we go. Okay, well, somebody may just come up and pop one.
Ryan Reynolds is Canadian.
Oh, man. And Ryan Reynolds is a good-looking dude, bro.
Very good-looking.
Very good-looking dude. What is it? Well, then let me, and he's funny. Damn it. Ryan Reynolds is funny too. So I'm getting sick of these Canadians. So damn funny. There's my theory. Here's my theory, okay? It's the shitty weather theory. The shittier the weather, the more talented the entertainer. And I'm not just talking about magic. I'm talking comedy. I'm talking music. We can back this up with a whole bunch of people.
I think that comedy is born often from suffering. And if you choose to live in a place where the air hurts your face, then you're going to suffer a lot. Like when it gets cold out here, we're about to have snow. We're about to have crazy snowstorms. And it's like September. And once the snow hits, like you don't want to leave your house till March. So like, yeah, you got nothing else to do but work on jokes and write or, you know, irritate your friends. Though most of my like joke writing happens online now. Right? Like you post on Facebook and then you delete your comment and then you write a new comment and then you delete it. My sister once saw me doing that. She'd like see me type something up, delete it, see me delete it. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm writing jokes.
Sometimes stuff will pop in the head in the shower and I keep it there and I'll take a quick little note. But then sometimes there's a lot of times that I keep a track of what I've posted, you know, I'll toss it out there. Who was the other Canadian? I had Bill Abbott. Okay, I had Ryan Stacey. He's not a magician. He's a ufologist. He's a
UFO
guy. So, but yeah, I've had a few super cool Canadians on here. Adding Ben Train to the list. Let me ask you this here. We're gonna throw a thought provoking question here at you, Ben.
Okay, I don't know what this is gonna be, but I'm ready.
All right, Ben Train.
Yes, sir.
If you were stranded on a desert island.
Yes.
Just you.
I would eat the palm tree, I would fuck the coconut, and I would marry a fish.
That's a coconut. That's, you know, okay.
I've always wanted to fuck a coconut.
With the coconut's consent, sir. With the coconut's consent.
It's no fun if both parties don't consent. That's how responsible lovemaking works, people.
Absolutely true.
Can a coconut consent?
I'm sure, maybe. If you're on an island long enough, yes.
Fair. Okay. Okay.
If it's a soccer ball can, was it a soccer ball?
Did he have sex with a soccer ball? I don't remember that.
You know he banged that ball, dude. You know he banged that ball.
You watch a different movie?
He banged that ball. Okay. But you're not alone on this island, by the way. So let me back. Here's the question.
Okay, you still wake up.
You're not banging a coconut, but you wake up. And the indigenous people on this island, who are white, by the way, I'm making these people white because I don't want anything to seem racist.
Right.
But
I'll be black in this.
Oh, you could be. You could be. Black Canadian.
They exist.
They do exist. They do. Shout out to my black Canadian people. I love you.
Your black Canadian listeners. You have a lot of them.
You wake up and there's all these spears pointed at your throat, okay? You, Ben Train, have to choose one magic trick to show these people to convince them that you, sir, are a god. What magic trick do you do? And don't bang the coconut.
What magic trick would I do? I would... No limitations. I could do whatever I want.
Well, I mean, you know, you're not going to
like,
pull
can out. I be David Copperfield? Like, can I be like, can I just start floating in front of them and then fireworks start going and like,
you would have
like
to...
trees are exploding around them. Like then they're going to leave me alone. But if I have to do something reasonable, I would produce a living creature. I would show like my empty hands, put them together, and then have a butterfly fly out or something. I think something about the gesture of showing empty hands is peaceful, and also something that is peaceful, like creating life and is benevolent and generous. I feel like if someone in front of you produces a delicate creature like a butterfly from their bare hands, the follow-up is you don't stab them in the neck.
So I like it. I like it.
And though, I am an amazing cuddler. So then I would find the biggest person there and I'd cuddle up and I'd be like, oh, what's that?
Getting coconuts?
Yeah. You got any coconuts?
Dude, I totally
stay away from my coconut daughters.
I dig it, man.
I'm a black. And he said, no, it's because you're Canadian. I'd say, oh, that's okay. That's fair.
Exactly. We love Canadians. We love our Canadians. I think that's a good answer, man. That's a fantastic answer. It is.
I've been thinking a lot about organic magic the last little while. Like, there was a great trick I read in a book where you take a seed and you put it in the dirt, and then a plant starts to grow from the dirt. And it's something I read that, can I reveal that on here? Absolutely. Can I reveal it?
Sure.
Okay, check this out. So if you're a non-magician, you're listening, I'm going to teach you how to do this. You're on a camping trip or you're on like a picnic with somebody. You take like an apple, you're eating it. You take the seed, you put it in the dirt, and then a plant starts to grow out of the dirt, and it's a real live plant. And here's the secret. Before you guys get to that spot or the site or secretly when no one's looking, you take a small plant that's growing that is got sort of a pliability, like you can bend it without breaking it, and you bend it down and you cover it with some dirt. So it's still in the ground, it's still planted, but it's completely hidden. Now you take the seed, you put it in the dirt near it, and you put your hands on top of the seed and you just start massaging the dirt. And as you massage the dirt with one of your hands, you're literally grabbing the plant and you're pushing it up. You're pushing it up. And when you're done, it looks like with empty hands, a plant has now grown out of the dirt and it's really there. The roots are intact. It's so deceptive. Like that kind of stuff. Like that, that's magic to me. Like you wouldn't have apparatus. It'd be bare hands. Plants would grow. Things would restore back to unbroken, unchaotic states.
Water. Dude, they would definitely worship you as a god if you did that on the island.
Yeah.
If you made, maybe a pot plant grow. That would be
magic, right? Pre-rolled.
I think only, first of all, that's a badass trick, by the way, but I only see magicians doing that,
I'm gonna give a reference, by the way, that is a trick, because we mentioned him, from Matt King's book on camping magic tricks for kids. And I read that book and I thought it was a fabulous trick and I tried it on somebody.
I need to get that. I love, dude, I'm such a big fan of Matt King, dude. And, especially being, in comedy, I see Matt King and it just kills me. He's great. And, you mentioned his Cards Across routine, which is freaking gold. Sometimes when I see a magician do a routine, I don't care if it fools me or not. That's, which I do like to be fooled. Don't get me wrong. But I don't care if it fools me or not, but I get excited when I see somebody do something like I've never seen it done before. And, we talk about Matt King with the Cloak of Invisibility, which is hilarious. I mention this guy constantly. I don't know if you know him. I've never met him. I would love to. I don't watch him perform because I get jealous because I see him doing things and I'm like, damn it, why did I not think of that? Is Rune Klan.
Oh, yeah. I knew you were going to say Rune Klan. I knew you were going to say it. Yeah, he's great.
The one thing, I've seen, have you seen him do his billiard ball routine?
I have. I'm a huge Rune Klan fan.
My God, dude, and I watched it and I just start dying laughing. And I'm like, that's gold.
You were talking gold. About your rope trick. Rune Klan came to mind because he does his rope trick that he hates. Yeah. he's great. And I think that one of the key elements to magic is that it's novel and new. When someone sees it, like if you walk out of your house and you see a car floating, that is mind blowing. But if you go outside of your house and every day you pass the floating car, at some point it's just an inconvenience in the way, right? It stops feeling magical. And it's the same thing, like going back to what we said, where I mentioned that sometimes we hear from people a criticism that they've seen the tricks before. What they're saying is, I came to see something mind blowing that's magic, that's impossible. But it doesn't feel impossible if I've seen this before. If I've seen multiple people do it, it doesn't feel impossible. And so that's something true with our magic. Like sometimes it might even be better to weaken a trick to make it really different. And I know that might sound crazy saying, I don't, I have, you know, no, I, but good. like, You know, there's a problem, the bill and lemon problem. There's this great trick. You have a bill and someone signs their name on it, it disappears. And then there's a lemon and you cut into the lemon and the bill is inside. Well, what is better than appearing inside of a lemon? And it's a really weird question, because obviously you could say, like, well, what about a grapefruit or something? Okay, that's basically the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you get a little crazy, you make it appear inside of a coconut and you need a special tool to break into it, or still very similar, right? It's inside of an organic object. And then you go like, well, what if it's inside of like an animal, like a fish, right? But then I start to go like, maybe that's easier because the fish, there's openings, right? You could feed it, you know? And what if it's in a block of ice? Well, the block of ice, you could freeze something inside. Oh, a titanium box. Well, someone could build it around it, you know? And you start getting away from this thing. And at the end of the day, I'm like, is there anything better than a lemon? Like, is there anything more magical than an uncut fresh piece of produce? Like, right?
I know
it's a weird thing to talk about, but like, if someone's seen the lemon trick, it's such an amazing, beautiful, memorable trick that if you do it again, you're still going to fool them. But I don't know if it's going to be as amazing or as impressive because they've seen that thing before. It's a stunt. So then is it better for you to do a trick that's not as good as the lemon trick, but it'll be more memorable because you're the only one who does card inside of trout?
Didn't Penn and Teller do card inside a trout?
They did a phone, I believe, inside
phone
of a
phone inside of a trout. That's interesting.
My examples of creativity are so Penn and Teller.
I do bill to cucumber is what I do. And there's a whole reason for it, you know. But I don't know. I don't know if you can top that.
Beat an organic object, right? Like a something that has no openings, that you can't tamper with it, that's like... Yeah. You can't put a bill in a lemon. You can't put a bill in a cucumber. Like, you can't. You can't put things in a cucumber. It's not designed to do that.
Not designed to do it. You can put a cucumber in things, but you cannot put
things
in a cucumber.
That's true.
I don't know, but now you can see what happened, ladies and gentlemen. People listen to the Abracadam podcast. Ben Train just took you down. Magic mind. Okay.
Also, I took some LSD and it just started kicking in. So I am woo.
You hear that, Lego and LSD? There we go, Ben Train. Well, I tell you what, Ben, before we get out of here, man, this was a blast, dude. Ben Train is the kind of guy that you could talk to for a week, okay? But do me a favor, Ben, let the listeners know, where can they find out more about Ben Train, Toronto Magic Company, anything?
You can find me on Tinder. I am very single. If any of you have any single ladies, Danny, post a picture of me. I'm well endowed financially, but not genitalially. I'm a good hugger. I'm terrible at kissing. About me. You can find me at train.ben on Instagram. That's train like a choo-choo, train.ben. I post a lot of pictures of my cat, of food, and of magic adventures. You can find us at torontomagiccompany.com. If you are a magician, go check it out, because at the end of November, we're doing a virtual magic convention called unconventional.fun, which is also the website, www.unconventional.fun. We have a big project coming out at the end of this year, which I can't talk about yet, but it's something really cool that we've been working on for about a year and a half. And we have another project coming out in either January or February, which is something we've been working on even longer. And it's probably the biggest release to date of ours. So plus I've got books coming out in the new year. I got all sorts of fun stuff. So follow me, train.ben on Instagram, follow me on Facebook, follow me on Tinder. Just don't follow me home because I get scared easy.
Awesome. And if you guys could tell, this guy eats, sleeps, and shits his pants magic.
10 pants at a time, folks.
10 pants. Ben Train, thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam, bro. This has been a blast. Thank you, man.
My pleasure. This was amazing. Danny, I love you. And listeners, I love you all too.
All right, that does it for that episode of the Abracadam Podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed Magician Ben Train. He is absolutely, he's hilarious. He's nuts. He's coconuts. Yes, Ben Train is coconuts. He is, no, seriously, if you are in the Toronto area and you get a chance to check out Ben, see him at the Toronto Magic Company or wherever he's performing, you definitely would enjoy it because he is a badass magician. And if you're a magician, check out Toronto Magic Company. There's a lot of things that they offer that we can benefit from, so you definitely want to check that out. If you guys have not done so, be sure to follow and subscribe to the Abracadam Podcast. We were literally on all types of platforms. We're everywhere. Mike Gritz in Orange Beach. We are everywhere. So definitely check us out. Be sure to subscribe, follow the Abracadam Podcast. And like always, oh yeah, let me give a quick shout out to Germany, Japan, and I think Turkey. I see you. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Thank you. Much love. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening.
Birthday party? And then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.